Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is Mike Kozak. I represent the Chesterfield Public Schools in this case.
Mr. Kozak, would you care to reserve any of your time for rebuttal?
Judge, I would like to reserve 3 minutes, if that's possible.
All right, that'll be fine. You can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, sir. Judge, Ms. Patrick, the claimant in this case, had suffered a compensable injury in May of 2012. After an extensive course of treatment in January 2013, the employer filed its application to terminate Ms. Patrick's benefits due to the fact that she had been released to full duty by both of her treating physicians. She had suffered a hand injuries, and a lumbar strain. Both the providers treating her for the hand and the back injuries had released her to full duty. That application was filed, and the commission suspended the claimant's benefits pending a hearing before the deputy commissioner. This hearing, Your Honors, was conducted on May 30th of 2013, and at the hearing, the deputy commissioner and the parties acknowledged that the claimant had returned to light duty work on May 20th, 10 days prior to the hearing. At that point, the deputy commissioner inquired of counsel, of me, what the employer's position would be given the fact that Ms. Patrick had returned to light duty. What would the employer's position be with respect to a temporary partial benefits due to the fact that Ms. Patrick had returned to light duty? Now, I would point out, Your Honor, that temporary partial disability benefits were not requested by the claimant in this case at any time prior to the decision by the deputy commissioner. They were not requested prior to the hearing. They were not requested at the hearing, and there was nothing filed after the hearing to request those benefits.
Mr. Kozak, let me interrupt you and see if I can kind of crystallize this issue, because I think it's a fairly narrow one. It's all about due process. Now, let's start with the proposition that we're talking about an administrative agency here, so due process standards are a bit relaxed.
Yes, sir.
We're strictly talking about minimal due process notice requirements. And I know you rely on WRLR Foods for your position, but your position, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that because she was released to full duty, that basically ended that claim, and that to do anything else required new notice, correct?
Well, at least some contemplation.
In a due process sense, I guess.
Yes, sir. I think minimal standards. I would admit that the procedures are relaxed in front of the commission, but I would just point the court to pages 39 to 42 of the appendix. We had a very specific discussion about what the employer was agreeing to.
So the only issue really is whether your company was on notice, your client was on notice of whether there was a potential disability award process pending, correct?
Well, we were not on notice, Judge, for what the deputy commissioner actually did. We were on notice, and what we agreed to was, if our application, if we lost, then there would be something for the commission to reinstate. And I guess I didn't cite in my brief, but I should have, perhaps, Judge Alston's opinion in the Poorman case, that if we're proceeding under 65.2708, there has to be an award to amend. And so when we went into court, when we went before the deputy commissioner, Your Honor, we were saying that the benefits should be terminated as of January 11th. And then we said, I guess under the category of no good deed goes unpunished, so what about the return to work? So, well, if we lose, that would mean that the court would reinstate the previously suspended benefits. And if that happened, there would be an award there for temporary total disability. Now, what are we going to do with that? And I conceded, well, she has gone back to work. We don't need to file. You know, I would be okay with us not having to file another application, a protective application. And Mr. Flax agreed with me. I mean, if you go through these pages, 39 to 42, you'll see that the judge crystallized the issue. He said, so let me make sure I've got this right. What you're saying is, if I deny your application, then you have no problem with me entering a temporary partial award. And I said, that's fine. It never was contemplated by me. I don't think Mr. Flax will get up here. I don't know what he's going to say, but I don't think he'll get up here and say it was contemplated by him.
Well, irrespective of what was contemplated, I mean, from a due process analytical perspective, it seems to me, at least, maybe you can answer this, it seems to me at least that the nature of the stipulation, such as it was, indicates, or at least would indicate to a reasonable conclusion, or at least you could draw a reasonable inference, it seems to me, that if the deputy commissioner terminated the existing total disability award, then she's still seeking a partial disability award. Why would that not be an obvious conclusion to draw?
Well, it certainly wasn't obvious to the deputy commissioner or to counsel at the hearing itself, because we discussed that possibility and we defined and we confined the scope of the hearing to that could happen if our application was denied. It was not, you know, Judge, I'll confess, when I get an opinion, I look to the back and see how it comes out. So when I flipped this opinion to the back, it said, the employer's application is granted. However, temporary partial is awarded. And, you know, I didn't fall off my chair. It wasn't the most, you know, amazing thing that I've seen. But I was taken aback. That was not contemplated. I don't think it was reasonable.
But getting back to Judge Humphrey's point about the concept of due process, isn't it true that the injuries that were alleged, you had an opportunity during the course of the hearing to inquire about the nature of the injuries, et cetera? In other words, there was an opportunity for you there, and you took advantage of the opportunity to inquire about the nature of the injuries that the claim is making the claim for, correct?
I did, Your Honor, but I think there's two components to that analysis. One is the notice component, and the other is prejudice. I know I didn't have notice of any temporary partial claim. The case was being defended, and it was acknowledged as being defended on the temporary total in our employer's application. So had I known...
I'm sorry. How do you deal then with the statement on appendix page 39 to 41? But the deputy commissioner says, okay, the way I've written that in my notes is that if the defendants have no objection to me awarding temporary partial as of 5/20, if the employer's application fails, is that adequate? And your response is, that's accurate.
If the employer application fails,
right.
I had no problem. But no one raised, I had no notice. Mr. Flax never raised. There was never any paperwork. There was never any statements made that would indicate that there was any possibility that if the county was successful, that then we would morph into basically a new claim sua sponte at the decisional stage. I was unable to find any controlling authority that would suggest that without notice, that at the decisional stage, deputy commissioner can then sua sponte grant unrequested relief. And we were dealing with, and again...
So the question was actually inverted from your perspective, in that you were asked a question, what would happen if you won or if you lost, okay, and you had no idea that the same thing could happen to you if you won?
Well, because we discussed that, and that wasn't even on the table. Mr., if you go to, that was on page 41, which Your Honor just quoted. If you go to page 42, the deputy commissioner says, okay, and then counsel for the claimant says, the alternative then, the employer would have to file a protective application, so this is just fine. At no point, as a matter of fact, we can then go on to page, I think it's,
well, you say
it's
there's
prior
a
to that.
Okay, I guess on the other side, if I find she was released to full duty at your contention, I would just cut it off, and then she would not be due any more benefits.
Correct.
And the response is that's correct.
That's correct. That was the parameters upon which we were dealing.
Well, I think what Judge Alston and I are kind of dancing around here trying to understand is we have the statements that were made, and I'm looking at the commission's opinion, if I can find it quickly here. It seems, okay, it looks like the commission found that it was not necessary to remand on the issue of partial disability benefits because the uh, Patrick, it says Patrick defended employer's application for hearing by asserting she remained disabled, and this is the commission's words, an implicit request for ongoing disability benefits. Now, I guess my question is, if the commission read that as an implicit request for ongoing disability benefits, then clearly we don't have a due process issue there, at least not one that's going to prevail. But is that a factual determination? Or, I mean, is that something the commission, is that something we reviewed de novo? If the commission says we interpret these, the context of all this that's going on as an implicit request for benefits, what's our standard of review of that, basically?
Well, Judge, I believe whether we've been accorded due process is a question of law. At the at the most, it's a mixed question of law and
well,
fact.
Well, certainly it's a de novo review of whether due process violation mm-hmm. occurred, but I guess my question would be, in terms of the facts that frame that, because we're, you know, whether one receives notice or no notice is a question of fact, it seems to me. Whether the notice satisfies due process is a question of law. But whether you actually got any kind of notice in the first place is a question of fact. And here it seems to me the commission is in essence saying there's an implicit notice here. So where does that leave us in terms of our legal analysis?
I would say, Your Honor, that is, there's nothing in the record that supports that conclusion. There is no credible evidence to support a factual conclusion that there was an, I don't understand,
well,
quite frankly, what,
the
and
commission
how
based,
am I...
The commission based it on the fact that the defense was the employer's application asserted that she remained disabled. That was the basis for the implicit nature of the request.
Well, Judge, there's nothing in the record that would lead one to conclude that, given the discourse between the parties, because the entire case was then predicated on the employer's application. How can counsel be reasonably, what's the logical extreme of this? I mean, what is the neutral governing principle? Is there always an implicit request? In any case, would I have to say, there's an implicit request for voc rehab services? An implicit request trumps an explicit stipulation. I see I've reserved some time for rebuttal, Your Honor, so I would
thank you, Mr.
like
President.
To take advantage of that. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Flax, you want to pick up with that? Give you a chance there?
May it please the court. My name is Robert Flax, and I represent Laura Patrick. Now, Your Honors, your question is that due process issue. And the law is very clear in the workers' compensation. In the case of Elkins versus Norton Community Hospital, decided in 2001, and had been the law for more than 10 years before this application was heard, the commission shall hear all the evidence that is presented to it and will make its decision based on all of the evidence, because the commission recognizes that based on the medical evidence, the testimonial testimony, at some point the injured worker may be totally disabled, may be partially disabled, may be wholly able to return to work, and that would affect their benefits. These applications are filed, hearings sometimes are a year later. Obviously they're entitled to hear all the evidence. So that is a rule which the employer knew of at the time of this hearing. Also, they knew that the rule of 2.2b, that the rules of practice are going to be liberal, not strict.
Well, Mr. Flax, I understand Mr. Kozak's argument to essentially boil down to there was this stipulation between counsel, you on one side and he on the other, as to what the deputy commissioner, what options were available to the deputy commissioner at that point. And that what ultimately occurred was outside of that stipulation and not anything contemplated by either party, and therefore violative of due process. How would you respond to that?
That is not correct. The first question the deputy commissioner asked to Mr. Kozak was, if I find from the evidence that Laura Patrick was restored to partial disability, from full ability to work to partial disability, and he said that, knowing that she had returned to partially returned to work, that there had been a medical review by the employer's employee medical review committee 2 weeks before the hearing that had said she was partially disabled, that I would, that would you agree that I could award partial disability benefits? Mr. Kozak said he did not oppose that. That was on page 39 to 40 of the appendix. And again, that is consistent with the law of the Workers' Compensation Commission, that it will consider all the evidence. And explicitly in that case of Elkins versus Norton Community Hospital, it said that in cases like that, when you consider all the evidence, and the evidence says that the employee was restored to what may be made a try return to work, worked a period of time, do not, the employer's application is granted, benefits cut off, turns out that was work beyond the, beyond that person's capability, partially disabled, the benefits resume based on partial disability. That, in that case, the full justice is done. It's based on all the evidence before it, and the commission explicitly said that the employee does not have to file its own application to reinstate temporary partial disability benefits. The employer knew this was a litigated issue. The application was filed on January 11, 2013. On March 13, 2013, it filed a report by Dr. Glick, the chiropractor on which they based their application, which pertained to her back injury. They knew that part was being litigated. They hired an independent medical exam, a Dr. Wilson from somewhere, who filed a report on March 22nd dealing with that back injury. And of course, Laura Patrick had her treating doctor, Dr. Valenti, who validated her partial disability, who was the only doctor who was treating her at the time in the months leading up to the hearing, uncontradicted, no other treating doctor.
Can you point specifically to where in the appendix there's something in the nature of a pleading that reflects that an issue to be litigated was partial disability benefits?
No, sir, there is not, except that that this issue of disability was consistently litigated, that the validity of the opinion of Dr. Glick was challenged, and I think you would find that every medical doctor disagreed with Dr. Glick, the chiropractor. Medical doctors, orthopedists, they all disagreed with him and held that she was disabled. But unfortunately, at the time that the application was filed, that was the doctor that the employer had, and that was the doctor that on which the commission based its opinion.
Counsel, how do you deal with the stipulation?
There was not a stipulation, ma'am.
Okay, explain that.
And I think if you look at the bottom of page 39 and the beginning of page 40, you will see that the deputy commissioner asked specifically the question, which was, let me ask you this, Mr. Kozak, if I find she is still disabled for a reason causally related to her accident, do you have any objection to modifying the award to temporary partial? And the answer was no. And again, that was consistent with the fact that the employer knew that she had gone back to work, she was working part-time, and she was under a partial disability, not only given by her the only treating doctor she had, but one that was validated by the employer's own medical review committee for employees that she had to pass before they would accept her back for employment. None of that was a surprise. It was all part of the evidence and was known before the hearing. And in fact, the employer prepared for this very event, very issue of whether a doctor would find that she was able to go back for work by augmenting its record after the application was filed with additional medical opinion from Dr. Glick and also from that independent medical doctor. And Dr. Glick's, by the way, is filed on March 31st, 2013. This issue of whether you can admit additional evidence and whether you need to require this separate application, which can delay the right for benefits for the injured worker for until this particular hearing was issue would be concluded, be another year without benefits, is part of the procedural authority that the deputy commissioner has. That would mean that the deputy commissioner, the commission's ruling could only be reversed based on abuse of discretion. It is not a de novo issue. It is abuse of discretion of their right to administer the case, to decide what evidence should be considered, and to make its decision. I might add, in addition to the Elkins versus Norton Community Hospital case, which explicitly said that the employee does not have to file its own application for temporary partial disability benefits. In 2011.
How do you distinguish this case from the Sergio's Pizza case? Sergio's Pizza case was a case where there was a suggestion that there were not two claims filed, and so therefore there should have been a consolidation of the two claims to allow the commissioner to actually reach the relief that was sought in what would have been the second claim. It was kind of a screwy fact situation.
I think that was a more confusing factual situation, and this case was very clear, and the facts were laid out in one continuum. And again,
the Sergio Pizza case has some interesting language that I'd like you to try to deal with. In that case, the court reversed and remanded the case, distinguishing it from Oak Hill, specifically finding that the employer never had notice prior to the review stage of the need to defend the claim as one of changing condition. The deputy commissioner did not consolidate the two claims. And so, again, we're talking about the need to join two claims together and for the injuries that are being alleged in one claim to have some causal relation to the injuries that occurred in the second claim.
Your Honor, I believe the answer is that that was the danger of having two claims pending and not consolidating them. And that is the advantage that the deputy commissioner and the commission had in this particular case, because they considered all of the evidence before the commission and consistent with the commission's practice and consistent with the commission's decisional law about how these matters should be considered. That baseline of law gives notice to the employer of what to expect. Also, this very issue was litigated throughout the case by medical documentation and et cetera.
From a factual standpoint, can you explain to this court how there's a causal relation between the two claims that exist in this case?
The causal relationship, Your Honor, is that the claimant is entitled to her lost wage benefits for as long as she meets the criteria to receive it, and that the employer is entitled to have the benefits disrupted when she is not eligible for it. The commission has established that in view of the way an individual's physical condition can improve or decline while these matters are going on. And I think also in recognition that doctors can have different opinions and more opinions and can change the medical facts that would warrant disability.
Okay, I hear you on that, but can you apply that principle to the facts of this case?
Yes, sir. And the facts of this case, if you're referring to the Patrick case, Your Honor, are that the commission found that the facts favored the employer by granting the employer's application as based on the opinion of the chiropractor, Dr. Glick, and that when my client's sole doctor became a treating physician who had a specialty in internal medicine and had a medical degree and had an opinion that she was disabled and was restored to partial ability, thereby enabling her to go back to work partially, then she was entitled to partial disability benefits. And again, it is the principle of practicality that the commission follows to avoid multiplicity of applications, to avoid the conflict which Your Honor mentioned in the Sergio Pizza case, that you have a more unified approach that avoids conflict, confusion.
Let me ask you this then, and I appreciate the point. Would you agree that applying the principle that you're stating here, that if the commission had ruled against you, in this case, just for sake of argument, that you would either be collaterally estopped or res judicata from litigating that issue down the road?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct. I would then have filed a new application. Yes, it would have been, if there, that is correct. As if Laura Patrick, when I hope that the ruling is entered for her, this issue will be res judicata as to the employer. So what goes...
And you, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
In the sense that she has partial disability, and she's entitled to partial disability benefits until there's another decision evaluating her physical condition and her work and her ability to work to determine whether there should be a change in her benefits.
So that collateral estoppel and res judicata or res judicata, whichever one would apply, would go to a specific period of time and not for any circumstance that would happen after the time period was established?
Until new facts establish grounds to change the ruling.
Okay.
Which is the way the workers' compensation system will work. And I might add, Your Honor, to give you an example of that argument, what if the hearing had been delayed and had been 2 or 3 months later, and the answer was that Laura Patrick had returned to full work and with no loss of pay? Then that would be the answer, and the deputy commissioner would have encompassed that in his decision.
Okay.
So it was based on the facts before the commission at the time when the hearing was held.
So there's a benefit, so to speak, for any and all parties who are subject to the rule that you're articulating. In other words, if there's an improvement, good for the employer. There's a decrease in ability, that's a benefit that has to be paid in favor of the claimant.
Yes, sir. It is based on the facts and the law.
Okay. As they exist at the time that the adjudication is accomplished.
That is correct. And that is the principle that the commission follows. It is based on the totality of the evidence considered at the hearing. In this case, the deputy commissioner used his discretion given to him by the rules of the commission, by its practice, and by a president to make the decision that he did. And I might add that was discussed with counsel at the outset. Mr. Kozak and I both discussed that. I refer you, of course, to page 39 and 40, where Mr. Kozak did agree that if Ms. Patrick was still partially disabled, and that she would be entitled to those benefits. And in the case of WLR Foods, just want to point out that this was distinguished from it because these issues were discussed at the hearing. It was litigated. It was not a decision made after the hearing was decided, and certainly not on appeal by the commission. Thank you, Your Honors. If Your Honors wish, I will answer any additional questions.
There are none, apparently. Thank you,
Thank
Mr. Flax. Mr. Kozak.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, we need to finish the analysis. I'm afraid we have to look back at 39 and 40 again. Mr. Flax is pointing to when the deputy commissioner asks if she's still disabled for a reason causally related to the accident, do you have any objection to modifying the award to temporary partial? And I said no. That's a millisecond. I said, I think your decision on our application will subsume all the issues. From our perspective, if that makes sense, maybe not. We go on to say, I think that if you rule against us, then obviously we would. You'd have to reinstate benefits back. We would reinstate benefits back to January, pay her temporary total until the May 20th date, and then go to temporary partial. And then the deputy commissioner sums this all up. Well, the predicate to that is, I guess on the other side, if I find she was released to full duty, it's your contention I would just cut it off and then she would not be due any more benefits. And then he summarizes it there at the bottom of page 21, which is, you have no objection to me awarding temporary partial if the application fails. And Mr. Flax concurs in the stipulation and says the alternative is the employer would have to file a protective application, so this is just fine. At no time did we have any notice that there was going to be an independent claim for temporary partial disability based on her return to work on May 20th.
Mr. Kozak, I just looked at page 65 and 66 of the joint appendix, and it seems to me that what that essentially, if I can just summarize it, tell me if you disagree. It seems to me, reading that, it's apparent to me that Ms. Patrick was clearly seeking partial disability benefits. She didn't dispute that she was able and in fact actually had returned to part-time work. So given that fact, it seems to me that to me is at least a distinction, maybe a significant distinction between the facts of WLR and what we have here. Whether or not you were had any notion was going to actually be litigated on that day, it seems to me that you could fairly infer from reading those pages of the joint appendix that your client was at least aware of her situation with regard to partial disability benefits.
Judge, I'd have to respectfully disagree. That was all related to, he was defending on the basis that there was continuing disability. There was no notice and there was prejudice because the letter from Dr. Valente was the coup de grace, if you will, that the commission relied on was a May 28th letter, and our hearing was May 30th, and you can see from the record is replete, that we continually submitted materials to the treating physicians to have them review them, and we had no opportunity to do that. I had no inkling that I would have to request the record to remain open.
Wasn't her entire defense to Chesterfield County's application to terminate total disability was that she was still in fact disabled and only able to work part-time? Wasn't that her entire defense to your claim?
Judge, I see my time is
expired. Go ahead and answer my question.
The defense it was acknowledged that she had returned to light duty, but the defense to our application was that she remained, or she was at the time of the application, totally disabled. That was the defense to our claim. And so I was, the agreement was, okay, if we were confident in our case on our application, the agreement was if we lose, that means the commission is finding an award, they're finding total disability and they can reinstate the award and then we don't have to come back to file a protective application. That's what we had agreed to. And in the Poorman case, what Judge Alston said was when you're there on change of condition, and I think we were there on change of condition, and Sergio's Pizza and WLR I think are right on point, you can't have a sua sponte decisional stage amendment of that application. You're only dealing with, of the claim, you're only dealing with the change of condition application, not taking evidence of what would justify a new award. And what happened in this case was evidence was presented by the claimant to justify a new award, but we were given no opportunity because we had no notice to confront that evidence.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kozak. Court will come down and greet counsel, and then we'll take up the matter of Brian Lamont.